doing throughout the last couple of months?
Yeah, good question. Hey, Sandy, great to be with you. Orlando, great to be here. I'm doing good. You know, I am. It's been an adjustment for me, too. You know, I've done some segments on TV locally here, and they asked me how I could give some tips, and I thought, you know, I've never been through a pandemic, but I use a lot of the logical skills that we use in psychology. I mean, I think one of the things that we're dealing with is anxiety. And there's two types of anxiety that people generally experience, and that's somatic. Somatic means body. S-O-M-A-T-I-C, somatic. And then cognitive. Cognitive is thinking. And that's where our thoughts go a little bit sideways. We can be negative and have reoccurring ruminations about negative thoughts. So
right.
Dealing with the anxiety is the major thing. I've noticed that my sons, who are my two older sons, who are 17, climbing the walls, and there are a couple times where I had to actually break them up in fist fights because they had got so frustrated with each other, just being around each other, and they both play football, and they weren't able to express themselves physically
right.
with their sports, and they weren't able to express themselves emotionally or psychologically through school and through the social interaction. So I'm like you, Sandy. I'm like you, Orlando. I'm like everyone out there. I'm a human being, and I have the same challenges that everybody else does. But overall, I'm good. I'm happy to be alive, and I have oxygen running through my veins.
Doc, a couple days ago, Justin Simmons in Florida stood up on the back bed of a truck and gave a speech that I thought just absolutely incredible. I don't know if you've heard it yet, but I just want to ask you now, how important is it for the Broncos to have that type of vocal leader in this locker room and that is not afraid to speak to his teammates, but not afraid to also address real world problems that we're going through right now?
Wow. That's really, I do not know the speech verbatim, but I heard about it.
Yeah.
And your question is, how important is it? It's extremely important. Mm-hmm. You know, Orlando, in my years and working in the NFL as a performance psychologist, it would really probably surprise people how many guys are not verbal and vocal leaders. There's a lot of guys that can play the game from the neck down. They're great athletes. They're great performers. But many times they haven't been taught the verbal and vocal skills to be leaders. And sometimes they'll think they'll be ostracized or they'll be singled out if they are a leader.
Yeah.
So to hear that he took that leadership opportunity, especially at this time, you know, there's a couple things going on. There's COVID, and then there's, you know, the race and the ethnicity that we are dealing with in this cult, in this society today, with the incident that happened in Minnesota, is, you know, raising a lot of awareness for a lot of people that were not aware of it, even though a lot of us who study psychology and human behavior, we're very much aware of it. So,
Docs, real quick stop.
That's a really good thing for him because the Broncos need that. You know, they had that in 15-16 with DeMarcus Ware and people like that. They need that on this team.
Doc, real quick, I just want you to hear the audio, and John has it queued up because so you can react on the backside of this because I think it's very important that you hear the words. I mean, because I thought it was amazing.
Martin will be the difference today. You will not have anybody. Martin through Florida will be the difference. I hope everyone understands that. We have come way too far. Okay, we are close. We need to stick together. We need to be unity. This is why this is important. Like I said before, this means more to us than anything you can post on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We need to be united. We need to be united. This is important. So while we're out here, don't forget, it was said earlier, I'm sad we're here. But we need to make sure that we understand that we are fighting for equality, not superiority.
Yes.
Right. Make sure we understand that. All lives matter when black lives matter. All lives matter when black lives matter. We pledge our allegiance to the flag for freedom and justice for all, and we do not have our justice. So let's understand that. But we will get it not by force. Okay? Not by force. I hope you guys understand that. Anyone that doesn't know who I am, my name is Justin Simmons. I am a product of Port Salerno, Florida. I currently play in the NFL, but that is not who I am. That is not what I do. I am a biracial human being. My dad is black. My mom is white. I understand the pain that both sides are dealing with. Racism is not one-sided. It goes all across the border, okay? So we need to understand that. I am here for equality. Let's make sure we represent that today. Thank you guys so much.
That's something. And, you know, I think he's speaking to something that a lot of folks are feeling in the society. But I remember Dr. Perea, to follow up on the point Orlando was making, Justin Simmons told Nikki Jabal of The Athletic on Sunday night after making that speech, he has never been more nervous in his life. And being comfortable in an arena that is uncomfortable is a sign of leadership, because as you were saying initially, we're all having our doubts. We're all experiencing anxiety during a time like this. That's what courage is, getting up there and speaking that eloquently when you're very nervous about doing so.
Yeah, and you know, what I love about what he said is he was very clear that he is a professional football player, but that's not who he is. He stated, I'm a biracial person.
Right.
Whose father is black, whose mother is white, and ethnicity and race. And I love the fact that he said that, because so many athletes, so many NFL athletes will rest on those laurels. But he basically said, that's not who I am. And I love that, because he's taking responsibility as a person. In this country, in this time, where we need leadership. We don't have enough leadership in this country right now on many levels. And for him to take that piece of leadership, that's got to be music to the ears to John Elway to hear that, because this team, the Denver Broncos, needs verbal and vocal leadership. I mean, it's lacked that. It's lacked that the last several years, and I think that's a really good sign. The other thing I want to comment about those words, Sandy, is that, you know, for him to take that risk, and it is a risk. You know,
yes.
A good friend of mine, Julius Thomas, who played here for the Broncos, who's now in a PsyD, a psychology doctorate program in South Florida, now getting his degree in psychology. He stood up one time and he says, you know, I am not an NFL player. It's what I do, but it's not my identity. And, you know, Simmons basically just took those words right out. That's what I do, but that's not who I am. And I think that's important, because when people look to professional athletes, they usually look up to them because of their talent and their skills from the neck down. But we're finding more and more of these young blood are educated, Sandy, in Orlando, and they're helping people understand it's not just athletics. It's the way we think, the way we feel, and the way we behave. And what happened in Minnesota, what happened in Minneapolis is not acceptable, and we need to understand that as a culture, we need to do this together. And he brought it together beautifully, because he said, I am biracial. I am a mix. And he's someone that stood up and gave leadership skills at a time that we dearly need it.
Well said, Doc. So we talk about the leadership and what Justin Simmons brings to that defense. I want to get your thoughts on Drew Lock now, because when you look at football and you look at just the aspects, and whenever I've been a part of great football teams, we've had some type of leadership on all different aspects. When I was here in 2011, Wesley Woodyard being the leader on the special teams, Brian Dawkins and Champ Bailey on the defense, along with DJ Williams as well. And then you had Kyle Orton, Tim Tebow, Chris Cooper, a lot of those guys mixed in on offense. But this past week, Drew Lock did an interview, and he talks about what is his personal goals. And I want you to listen to this audio real quick and get your reaction real quick.
Wow, some personal goals for me this season. Hopefully we have a full season and it goes according to plan. But personal goals for me this season, I mean, it's got to be to win enough games to get in the playoffs. You know, we talk about Denver, you know, just the legacy they have in winning Super Bowls and making it to the playoffs. That town needs it. We need it. I want it. The whole team wants it. So the ultimate goal for me right now, I'm not going to throw stats out there. I want the touchdowns, yards. We need to make it to the playoffs, and we need to make a run once we get there. We need to play our best ball and, you know, start getting the guys on this team, because we're a really young team. We're very young. And the more playoff experience we have, that will just help us, you know, in years to come. So I think my biggest goal is definitely, you know, getting us to the playoffs.
What does it say to a young quarterback that's only played five games in this league that when he's asked what his personal goals is, it's he makes it all about the team.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's collaborative. It's cooperative. It's that social cohesion we talk about oftentimes. You know, there's two types of cohesion. There's task. That means everyone does their job. And social is playing together, being attracted to your teammates. And so he took what a question that was individual, and he made it into team. It's we. It's not me. And that's one of the things I've been impressed with him as he's going on into his second, third year, is he is a guy that has the physiological skills, the neck down. I saw that from him from Jump Street. But he also is developing those verbal leadership skills to understand that what's going to win in this league is a we mentality. A me mentality does not win in the NFL. I've seen it firsthand. And again, John Elway should be very happy on the offensive side to hear his starting quarterback turn an individual question into a collaborative and cohesive question.
Hey, you give advice to all sorts of people. And as you're talking, I'm thinking of the idea that you can speak to CEOs and you can speak to blue-collar workers with equal amounts of insight and positive reinforcement. Is the advice you give during this period especially to a CEO different from what you might say to a blue-collar worker or even an athlete making millions of dollars?
You know, Stan, that's a great question. Here's the reality. The CEO, the blue-collar, professional athlete, surgeon, astronaut, really doesn't matter. The brain doesn't know what your title is. Your mind does, but your brain doesn't. So whatever you feed your brain will believe. So it doesn't really differ whether I'm talking to someone who, like I said, is an astronaut or a professional quarterback or a blue collar, because what they need to do is center themselves on what we call the autonomic nervous system, that parasympathetic side where they're calm, their heart rate is slow, their respiration is slow, their muscle tension is limited, and they have very clear thinking. That's the calm side of the autonomic nervous system. The other side is sympathetic, and that's where stress and anxiety live. And it comes down to that, guys, is that when we teach any kind of performer to stay on that parasympathetic side, they have the opportunity to perform at their very best. And you know what? It's interesting is there are more and more people that are reaching out to me during this pandemic that are quote unquote, not performers. They're moms and dads. They're people that are struggling in relationships. And it's the same thing for them. You know, the most heated times in relationships, when you're in an argument, you're on that sympathetic side and you're going to say things perhaps you don't mean. You're going to do things you don't mean. You got to get back on that parasympathetic side, just like that astronaut needs to perform or that starting quarterback on fourth and one at the 1 yard line. They got to perform. It happens for everyday people. So the biology of the autonomic nervous system does not know the difference. The biology of the brain does not know any difference. Only when we train the mind, that's when the difference comes in. And the difference between the brain and the mind, for the listeners, the brain is the anatomy. The mind is the brain plus input. So all of our brains are identical. Our minds are very different.
You touched on something great right there, talking about performance when you're talking about Fortune 500 companies and blue collar people. I want to now know how that relates to sports, because right now you got all these different leagues that are trying to get back to playing sports and all these different collective bargaining agreements or different proposals being thrown out there. But how do the athletes, the ones that have to go out there and play at a high level, stay focused, and now when they do open up, are able now to perform as well?
Yeah, you know, it goes back to a couple months ago, Orlando, when this pandemic first hit. And one of the things I said back then is we have to keep some kind of schedule, some kind of regimen. Just because you're not doing OTAs with your team doesn't mean you just hang out, watch TV, and eat bonbons. No, you still have to have a schedule. You can work out at the park. You can go, a lot of guys would get together. I know I was down in Arizona, and I saw a lot of guys getting together out there. Now, whether they were practicing social distancing or not, I'm not the police that's going to regulate that. But, you know, people have found a way to keep some kind of schedule. I know for me, like, I can't go to my gym. I, you know, here at my office, I have a little facility where I'm able to work out. people are finding that in their homes. They are making, you know, they are adapting to getting a workout in. And then also, but the key is, Orlando, the emotional adaptation. A lot of people are struggling in the dark right now. It's, you know, I read a statistic the other day that domestic violence was up 300%.
Yes.
And I want people to understand something. That's reported domestic violence.
Right.
And that's not to say all of the domestic violence that's happening unreported. And we traditionally know that 1 in 3 cases is never reported. So the numbers are much higher than what we're even seeing. So it's not just the physiological, Orlando, it's the emotional and psychological. And I can tell you, I've had players reach out to me in the last 4 to 5 weeks when this pandemic really started to wear on, and they're like, "Doc, I don't even know what to do anymore. I'm struggling emotionally, psychologically." And you know what, Orlando? They weren't willing to admit that pre-pandemic, and now they're willing to do it because they feel they're like they're boxed in a corner when you can't go anywhere. So I think we saw it recently with a former Bronco who got into an incident. You know, they were playing cards and got into an incident, and there was a gun involved. So there's a lot of things that are escalating. Yeah, Cody Latimer, they're escalating that typically wouldn't happen. So that's a very good question, Orlando.
Hey, we'll talk about your book here in just a few minutes. But I wanna read something to you. This has to do with Major League Baseball. This is from The Athletic on the latest in the negotiations, if you can call them that, going on between the Major League Baseball Players Association and the owners in Major League Baseball. No proposal, no further negotiation scheduled. Clock ticking while Major League Baseball is considering playing 50-odd games in 2020 unless the players agree to further reduce their pay. It is not yet planning to present such an idea to the Players Association, according to sources with knowledge of Major League Baseball's thinking. I don't know how closely you followed the back and forth. Major League Baseball is leaking stories seemingly every week. The union is responding with pretty much uncontrolled vitriol. If you had to mediate, this may be a challenge that's even too steep for you to take on, but if you had to mediate between these two sides as they argue about money, millions and in some cases billions of dollars during a pandemic, what would you tell them?
I would tell Major League Baseball to not be so individualistic and be more collectivistic. And what I mean by that is culturally. When you look at Major League Baseball, it's a very individualistic sport. And I know, having worked in Major League Baseball, the individuals and their agents and what's really postulated and talked about in terms of their contract, their guarantee of their contract, and really who's out for who. You know, the NFL is very collectivistic. The NBA is very collectivistic. And what I mean by that is, they're in it together. They're all like, you know, you've heard LeBron. You've heard some of these top players come out and say, "Hey, man, you know what? Let's make this happen. Let's all do this together." He uses that word together. Let's do it together. But in baseball, you don't hear that word as much, Sandy.
No, never.
And I can tell you, having worked in the Major League Baseball, and still do, you know, I've been in clubhouses where people are very individualistic. I mean, pitchers are on one end of the clubhouse. The Latin players are on one end. The white players are on the other end. And it's very individualistic. And I'm not saying it's always that way, but it's very, very different than an NFL locker room, if you say. So when you look at the culture, the core root culture of Major League Baseball versus the NFL, for example, the NFL is very collectivistic. I mean, people tend to band together, and in the Major League Baseball tends to be very individualistic. Now, I know that's going to upset a lot of people, but I'll tell you what, I'm telling the truth. And that was one of the things that when I worked with teams, when I worked with the Rockies, I'm like, we got to come together. We've got to be more collectivistic so we can bring that energy and passion together. And I think the teams that have, you look at the Cubs under Madden, he had that mentality, like, we're in this together. And when major league teams find a way to do that, they win. But that, to me, Sandy, was where I would begin. I'd say it's not about you players and your money. It's about the fans. I mean, the fans drive this thing. TV drives this thing. And don't forget who pays your bills at a core level, because it's really when they get individualistic and think about their money, that's very selfish.
When we come back, a week from today, Dr. Rick Perea's book will be coming out, Decision Point, the moment leaders are born. And as I said earlier, even the title, just the title, makes me want to read the book. And we'll talk about that next.
This segment on 104.3 The Fan is brought to you by SCL Mortgage.
It's Orlando and Sandy on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Dr. Rick Perea, our guest, heads up Think One, the behavior design specialist, and your book, long awaited. I know you've been getting calls at the office about when's the book coming out? It'll be a week from today, the 9th of June, Decision Point, the moment leaders are born. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, Sandy, this book was born out of a couple players, Ryan Harris, Benny Fowler, a few others, who had written books about our Super Bowl season with the Broncos, 15-16. And they were quoting me in their books, and they're like, Doc, you need to write a book about our experience that year, and more importantly, what you do. And so that was the beginning, Sandy. But as I got into it, I was discovering that, you know, a lot of people have been through trauma and through tragedies in their life, and yet they've made beauty out of it. You know, there's beauty in the struggle. I think it was Tupac Shakur that said that in a song. There's right. beauty in the struggle, but we have to be willing to find the beauty within the struggle. And so much of this book is about becoming a champion in your life as a business executive, as a pro athlete, whatever, mom and dad, brother, sister. But it's also about how to overcome tragedy, how to overcome trauma. And, you know, I've had five or six people that contributed to this book in a really grand way. And I just want to take this time to thank you, Sandy, because you contributed a huge piece to this book in chapter 6, which really has given so much credibility and credence to the issues that we have today with our adolescents. And I just want to thank you for that. So yeah, it's we're excited. It's coming out 1 week from today. It'll be available on Amazon. And again, my goal is not to sell hundreds and thousands of books. My goal was to give the voice to people right. who are struggling in our society, who have been through trauma and tragedy, but yet come out and be a champion on the other side.
Yeah. Doc, when you talk about the struggle, right, everybody's had some different aspects of some kind of struggle in their life. And now you come out with this book. But how does this book now correlate and transition to other people outside the sports world? Because you could be a leader of a Fortune 500 company, or you could just be a guy that works a 9-to-5 for 50 years, but there's struggles that are always going to be a part of that. So how do people get through and break down those walls? Because I've had many different times in my life where you're just like, man, I want to give up. But what are the most important things to be telling yourself during those times?
Yeah, wow, great questions, Orlando, and very, very vulnerable to be able to say that. I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, all of us go through times when we really do struggle, and we get to the point where we want to give up. You know, I publish a song in this book. It's called Love is the Answer, and it talks about when you feel like giving up, love one another. When you feel near the end, love one another. When you're at the end of your rope, love one another. So love is an important piece, but it's also getting help. When you need help, you know, mental health is becoming more and more important now, especially yes. with this pandemic. We have seen that there's more and more people that are willing to raise their hand and say, I'm struggling. And, you know, I've experienced personally, you know, I have a person that's coming into my office today that's an urgent situation. It's a young adolescent that's struggling with depression. And we have to be willing to make mental health more mainstream. You know, let's go back to Julius Thomas. He said something great several years ago, and he writes the foreword in my book, and he did a really amazing job. But he said, you know, we don't have permission in the NFL to have emotional issues. We right. can walk into a training room, a locker room, and say, my knee hurts, my elbow hurts, and they say, hey, jump up on the table, let's take a look. But if I walk into that training room and I say, hey, man, I'm struggling emotionally, people look at you kind of sideways. And you know this, Orlando, people will look at you in a different way. Yeah. We need to make it okay that we struggle at times emotionally. It doesn't mean we're weak. It means that we're raising our hand and say, you know what? I'm a human being. And I'm a human being that needs help, and it's okay. And I can tell you this from my experience. Some of the greatest players I've been around in the NFL are some of the most vulnerable players. They will come in and say, Doc, I'm struggling with this. I'm struggling with that. And that's in this book. And again, coming back to Sandy. Sandy was so authentic and open and honest with his struggles in his life, and he has shared that, and it gives this book that much more energy and validity. But yes, Orlando, you touch on a great point. Doesn't matter if it's a pro athlete or a guy who's working 9 to 5, who's struggling in his marriage, struggling in relationships, struggling to make their house payment. It's all covered in the book.
I think, Rick, those of us who have been privileged in our lives and have so much to be grateful for in our lives, there is a hesitancy, and maybe I need a stronger word than that, resistance to coming forward. You know, you've been given so much in life. I've been given so much in life. And I have enjoyed a certain degree of privilege that others have not. And yet there are struggles, and you feel almost guilty about coming forward with those struggles. And yet it is becoming increasingly okay. If there's anything to come out of this pandemic and anything to come out of the last week, that we need to remember, regardless of your station in life, open up. We're all struggling. I'm 62 years old, and Orlando's barely half my age, and I know we're both thinking about who we want to be. Getting back to the Justin Simmons bite earlier, are we defined strictly by what we do? And in finding who we are, yes, there is beauty in that struggle. And I know you've experienced loss in your life. I've experienced loss in mine. Orlando has shared very publicly and very openly about the struggles he went through, particularly growing up. Being born in one part of the world, growing up in another country, coming to America during his teenage years, all of us must find beauty in that struggle, right?
You know, Sandy, let me say this, take this minute to say this. Thank you so much. I do know loss. One of the precipitators of this book was I had a brother that was murdered when I was 7 years old. He was 18. He was murdered. And I talk about that in the book. But more importantly, Sandy, you have shared your honest and open struggles when your son Ryan died on May 4th, 2017 by suicide. And you've been open about it, and you talk about it in this book. And I got to tell you, Orlando, I want to tell it to you, Orlando. I've told it to Sandy, but I'm going to tell it to you too, Orlando. I've always respected Sandy because of his competency and his acumen in what he does. To me, he's one of the best in the world at his level of analysis. But he grew 10 foot in my eyes when he wrote what he did in my book, the authenticity, the poems that he selected about his son, Ryan. And if I can just read one paragraph, Sandy, from that book,
sure,
that I just want people to hear. And this is Sandy writing. Quote, "My son, Ryan, took his own life back on May 4th, 2017. It is a crisis of epic proportions that is impacting our youth today. It hit home for me when I personally had to walk it out with my own son. In fact, that was the day he went missing, but it turned out to be a full 2 weeks to the day before his body was found near the Kansas-Missouri border. Now, I'm going to say this. There's much more in this book where he talks about his sometimes guilt, his feelings, but I can tell you this, having spent time with the Clough family, at their home, at dinner, around them, Sandy is an amazing father, still is to this day to Sarah. He's an amazing husband, still is to this day to Gene. He's an amazing friend to me. But I got to tell you, Orlando, the authenticity that he wrote in this book makes this book grow by leaps and bounds. And there's five other people that have shared their loss, murder, cancer. It's just tremendous. And I wrote this book because some of these things needed to be said. And Mr. Sandy Clough, I can only say thank you, thank you, thank you for the courage and the strength and the intestinal fortitude it took to write the pieces you did in this book, Chapter 6, Shedding Light on a Dark Subject.
I think you just hit it right on the head, Doc, because I knew about the situation, but I've never talked to Sandy about it. Each and every day you come in, and I've experienced death in my life, and I have a very similar story to you, Doc, with one of my brothers. They were died because of murder, but Sandy's never shared his story, right? And you know, I appreciate the relationship, the friendship that you guys have, and the bond that you guys have created over the year for him to feel comfortable enough to share that, you know, because I'm looking forward to hearing about it, because I've never felt comfortable about asking questions like that, but you could tell that Sandy felt comfortable with sharing these stories with you and sharing it with everybody. So, you know, thanks a lot, and I can't wait to read it. And, you know, Sandy, my heart is with you, and it's a really, really bad situation anytime you lose a loved one, but I'm happy that you're able to talk about it now.
Well, I can only thank Dr. Peru for giving me the opportunity to talk about this. I've had a chance to do it, and that's been one of the things that perhaps worked out well in the end, that I haven't done it in the past when I've been asked about it, when Rick came to me and shared his experience with me too. It gave me a safe space. I thought this book was a safe space to share those things. And I know that all of you, in different ways at the radio station, have been so supportive, and that people like Bob Call and Larry Jager have experienced loss, and I deal with those people on a regular basis, and they lost sons too at around the time that Ryan took his life. And so we've been able to lean on one another, and it's deepened our relationships. And you come from a place of fear into a place of shared experience. It was very therapeutic for me. And we talk about things every day, but I think we both were struck by what Justin Simmons said yesterday, by not defining ourselves by what we do, but by who we are, and learning through our mistakes and our regrets and our doubts, and always learning and keeping the struggle going, and trying to make things better for people, even during the most difficult of times. So I want to thank you both. And Dr. Perea, I'm looking forward to the release of the book. I can't wait to read it. I know many of our listeners have asked about, when's Dr. Perea's book coming out? So now they know. Next Tuesday, June 9th, available through Amazon, right?
Absolutely, through Amazon. They can order it then, and then I'm going to have a book party at the end of the month, June 26th. But, Orlando, let me just say this real quick. You said you lost your brother by murder. Hey, brother, we're in the same fraternity. And for those listeners out there, if you've lost someone by murder, we're in the same fraternity. We're all in this together, man. Band together, okay? Band together. Read this book, not because you're gonna line my pockets. I'm not going to make any money on this book. I don't want to make any money on this book. But because we can help you. We can help you see the light on the other side. If you've been through trauma, if you've been through tragedy, we can help you see the light on the other side. But Orlando, Sandy, we're brothers. We're fraternities together for long. I love you guys.
Love you too, Doc. Thanks a lot for coming on with us.